Welcome to Audio Journal's Radioactive Theater, a series of programs presenting outstanding radio dramas for your listening pleasure. For this program, RAT presents three short plays based on short stories by famous American storytellers. Roman Fever by Edith Wharton is among her last writings and caps off her noteworthy career. At first, the story seems to be little more than the nostalgic remembrances of two middle-aged women revisiting Rome. Yet it turns out to be much more. Narrated by Catherine Thornton, Roman Fever includes Erica Slater as Mrs. Slade and Valerie Clapham as Mrs. Ansley, lifelong friends with secrets. Our second two plays are based on two short stories by Kurt Vonnegut from Welcome to the Monkey House, first published in 1968. The first is Long Walk to Forever, which we have adapted for RAT. Narrator is Catherine Thornton, with Katie Traver playing Catherine and Alex Shapiro playing Newt. The second play is Who Am I This Time, adapted by Christopher Sergo. Occasionally, the characters speak directly to the audience as the plot unfolds. Our cast includes Alex Shapiro as Harry Nash, Cindy Johnson as Miss Sawyer, Lorraine Mason as Mary, Jay Thompson as Newt, Katie Traver as Helene, Norman Micklejohn as George, Catherine Thornton as Suzanne, and Helen Neely as Catherine. We hope you enjoy an interesting glimpse into human nature. Here is Edith Wharton's Roman Fever. From the table at which they had been lunching, two ladies of ripe but well-cared-for middle age moved across the lofty terrace of the Roman restaurant and, leaning on its parapet, looked first at each other and then down on the outspread glories of the Palatine and the Forum with the same expression of vague but benevolent approval. As they leaned there, a girlish voice echoed up gaily from the stairs leading to the court below. "Well, come along, then," it cried, not to them, but to an invisible companion, "and let's leave the young things to their knitting." And a voice as fresh laughed back, "Oh, look here, Babs, not exactly knitting." "I mean figuratively," rejoined the first. "After all, we haven't left our poor parents much else to do." And at that point, the turn of the stairs engulfed the dialogue. The two ladies looked at each other again, this time with a tinge of smiling embarrassment, and the smaller and paler one shook her head and colored slightly.
"Barbara!"
"That's what our daughters think of us."
"Not of us individually. You must remember that. It's just the collective modern idea of mothers. And you see, one never knows. The new system has certainly given us a good deal of time to kill. And sometimes I get tired just looking, even at this magnificent view."
The other lady, who was fuller and higher in color, with a small, determined nose supported by vigorous black eyebrows, laughed again. The luncheon hour was long past, and the two had their end of the terrace to themselves.
"Well, I don't see why we shouldn't just stay here. After all, it's the most beautiful view in the world."
"It always will be to me."
"It's a view we've been familiar with for many good years. When we first met here, we were younger than our girls are now. You remember?"
"Oh, yes, I remember."
"There's no knowing, I suppose, when the girls will be back. Do you even know back from where? I don't."
"I think those young Italian aviators we met at the embassy invited them to fly to Tarraquinia for tea. I suppose they'll wait to fly back by moonlight."
"Moonlight. Moonlight, what a part it still plays. Do you suppose they're as sentimental as we were?
I've come to the conclusion that I don't know in the least what they are. And perhaps we didn't know much more about each other.
No, perhaps we didn't.
I never should have supposed you were sentimental, Alida.
Well, perhaps I wasn't.
For a few minutes, the two ladies, who had been intimate since childhood, reflected on how little they knew each other. Each one, of course, had a label ready to attach to the other's name. Mrs. Delphin Slade, for instance, would have told herself, or anyone who asked her, that Mrs. Horace Ansley, 25 years ago, had been exquisitely lovely. No, you wouldn't believe it, would you? Though, of course, still charming, distinguished. Well, as a girl, she had been exquisite, far more beautiful than her daughter Barbara. Though certainly Babs, according to the new standards at any rate, was more effective, had more edge, as they say. Funny where she got it with those two nullities as parents. Yes, Horace Ansley was, well, just the duplicate of his wife, museum specimens of old London, good-looking, irreproachable, exemplary. Mrs. Slade and Mrs. Ansley had lived opposite each other for years. Not many months apart, both ladies lost their husbands. There was an appropriate exchange of wreaths and condolences and a brief renewal of intimacy in the half-shadow of their mourning. And now, after another interval, they had run across each other in Rome, at the same hotel, each of them the modern appendage of a salient daughter. The similarity of their lot had again drawn them together, lending itself to mild jokes and the mutual confession that, if in the old days it must have been tiring to keep up with the daughters, it was now, at times, a little dull not to. Mrs. Ansley was much less articulate than her friend, and her mental portrait of Mrs. Slade was slighter and drawn with fainter touches. Alida Slade's awfully brilliant, but not as brilliant as she thinks would have summed it up, though she should have added to, for the enlightenment of strangers, that Mrs. Slade had been an extremely dashing girl, much more so than her daughter, who was pretty, of course, in a clever way, but had none of her mother's vividness, someone had once called it. Mrs. Ansley would take up current words like this and cite them in quotation marks as unheard of audacities. No, Jenny was not like her mother. Sometimes Mrs. Ansley thought Alida Slade was disappointed. On the whole, she had had a sad life, full of failures and mistakes. Mrs. Ansley had always been rather sorry for her. So these two ladies visualized each other, each through the wrong end of her little telescope. For a long time, they continued to sit side by side without speaking. Like many intimate friends, the two ladies had never before had occasion to be silent together. Suddenly, the air was full of that deep clangor of bells which periodically covers Rome with a roof of silver.
5 o'clock already.
There's bridge at the embassy at 5.
Bridge, did you say? Not unless you want to, but I don't think I will, you know.
No, no, I don't care to at all. It's so lovely here and so full of old memories, as you say.
I was just thinking, what different things Rome stand for each generation of travellers. To our grandmothers, Roman fever. To our mothers, sentimental dangers, how we used to be guarded. To our daughters, no more dangers in the middle of Main Street. They don't know it, but how much they're missing.
Yes, how we were guarded.
I always used to think that our mothers had a much more difficult job than our grandmothers. When Roman fever stalked the streets, it must have been comparatively easy to gather the girls in at the danger hour. But when you and I were young, with such beauty calling us, and the spice of disobedience thrown in, and no worse risk than catching a cold during the cool hour after sunset, the mothers used to be put to it to keep us in, didn't they?
Mrs. Slade leaned back, brooding, her eyes ranging from the ruins which faced her to the long green hollow of the forum, the fading glow of the church fronts beyond it, and the outlying immensity of the Colosseum. Suddenly she thought,
"It's all very well to say that our girls have done away with sentiment and moonlight, but if Babs Ansley isn't out to catch that young aviator who's a Marchesa, then I don't know anything. And Jenny has no chance beside her. I know that too. I wonder if that's why Grace Ansley likes the two girls to go everywhere together. My poor Jenny is a foil."
Yes?
Oh, nothing. I was thinking about how your Babs carries everything before her. That Campolieri boy is one of the best matches in Rome. Don't look so innocent, my dear. You know he is. And I was wondering, ever so respectfully, you understand, whether... wondering how two such exemplary characters as you and Horace had managed to produce anything quite so dynamic.
I think you overrate Babs, my dear.
No, I don't. I appreciate her. And perhaps envy you. Oh, my girl's perfect. If I were a chronic invalid, I'd rather be in Jenny's hands. There must be times, but there. I always wanted a brilliant daughter and never understood why I got an angel instead.
Babs is an angel too.
Of course, but she's got rainbow wings. Well, they're wandering by the sea with their young men, and here we sit. And it all brings back the past a little too acutely.
Mrs. Ansley resumed her knitting. Mrs. Slade imagined that she also had too many memories arising from the lengthening shadows of those august ruins. What was there for her to be worried about? She knew that Babs would most certainly come back engaged to the extremely eligible Compagliere, and she'd sell the London house, settle down near them in Rome, and never be in their way. She's much too tactful. But she'll have an excellent cook and just the right people in for bridge and cocktails, a perfectly peaceful old age among her grandchildren. There was no one of whom she had less right to think unkindly of than Grace Ansley. Would she never cure herself of envying her? Perhaps she had begun too long ago.
The sunset. You're not afraid, my dear?
Afraid?
Of Roman fever or pneumonia. I remember how ill you were that winter. As a girl, you had a very delicate throat, hadn't you?
Oh, we're all right up here. Down below in the forum, it does get deathly cold, all of a sudden. But not here.
Ah, of course. You know, because you had to be so careful. Whenever I look at the forum from up here, I remember that story of a great-aunt of yours, wasn't she? A dreadfully wicked great-aunt.
Oh, yes. Great-aunt Harriet. The one who was supposed to have sent her young sister out to the forum after sunset to gather a night-blooming flower for her album. All our great-aunts and grandmothers used to have albums of dried flowers.
But she really sent her because they were in love with the same man.
Well, that was the family tradition. They said Aunt Harriet confessed it years afterwards. At any rate, the poor little sister caught the fever and died. Mother used to frighten us with the story when we were children.
And you frightened me with it. That winter when you and I were here as girls. The winter I was engaged to Delphin.
Oh, did I? Really frightened you? I don't believe you're so easily frightened.
Not often, but I was then. I was easily frightened because I was too happy. I wonder if you know what that means.
Yes.
Well, I suppose that's why the story of your wicked aunt made such an impression on me. And I thought, there's no more Roman fever, but the forum is deathly cold after sunset, especially after a hot day, and the Colosseum's even colder and damper.
The Colosseum?
Yes, it wasn't easy to get in after the gates were locked for the night. Far from easy. Still, in those days it could be managed. It was managed often. Lovers met there who couldn't meet elsewhere. You knew that.
I dare say. I don't remember.
You don't remember? You don't remember going to visit some ruins one evening, just after dark, and catching a bad chill? You were supposed to have gone to see the moon rise. People always said that expedition was what caused your illness.
Did they? It was all so long ago.
Yes, and you got well again, so it didn't matter. But I suppose it struck your friends, the reason for your illness, I mean, because everybody knew you were so prudent on account of your throat, and your mother took such care of you. You had been out late sightseeing, hadn't you, that night?
Perhaps I had. The most prudent girls aren't always prudent. What made you think of it now?
Because I simply can't bear it any longer.
Can't bear what?
Why, you're not knowing that I've always known why you went.
Why I went?
Yes, you think I'm bluffing, don't you? You went to meet the man I was engaged to, and I can repeat every word of the letter that you took there.
Oh, no, don't.
Why not? Listen, if you don't believe me, my one darling, things can't go on like this. I must see you alone. Come to the Colosseum immediately after dark tomorrow. There will be somebody to let you in, No one whom you need fear will suspect. But perhaps you've forgotten what that letter said.
No, I know it by heart too.
And the signature? Only your DS. Was that it? I'm right, am I? That was the letter that you took out that evening after dark?
I don't know how you knew. I burnt that letter at once.
Yes, you would. Naturally, you're so prudent. And if you burnt the letter, you're wondering how on earth I know what was in it. That's it, isn't it? Well, my dear, I know what was in that letter because I wrote it.
You wrote it?
Yes.
Oh,
I horrify you.
I wasn't thinking of you. I was thinking it was the only letter I ever had from him.
And I wrote it. Yes, I wrote it. But I was the girl he was engaged to. Did you happen to remember that?
I'm not excusing myself. I remembered.
And you still went?
Still I went.
You do understand. I found out. And I hated you, hated you. I knew you were in love with Delphin. And I was afraid of you, of your quiet ways, your sweetness, your... Well, I wanted you out of the way, that's all. Just for a few weeks, till I was sure of him. So in a blind fury, I wrote that letter. I don't know why I'm telling you now.
I suppose it's because you've always gone on hating me.
Perhaps. Or because I wanted to get the whole thing off my mind. I'm glad you destroyed the letter. Of course, I never thought you'd die. You must think me a monster.
I don't know. It was the only letter I had. And you say he didn't write it?
Ah, how you care for him still.
I cared for that memory.
Mrs. Slade looked down on her. She seemed physically reduced by the blow, as if when she got up the wind might scatter her like a puff of dust. Mrs. Slade's jealousy suddenly leaped up again at the sight. All these years, the woman had been living on that letter. How she must have loved him to treasure the memory of mere ashes. The letter of the man her friend was engaged to. Wasn't it she who was the monster?
You tried your best to get him away from me, didn't you? But you failed, and I kept him. That's all.
Yes, that's all.
I wish I hadn't told you. I'd no idea you'd feel about it as you do. I thought you'd be amused. It all happened so long ago, as you say, and you must do me the justice to remember that I had no reason to think you'd ever take it seriously. How could I, when you were married to Horace Annesley 2 months afterwards? As soon as you could get out of your bed, your mother rushed you off to Florence and married you. People were rather surprised. They wondered at its being done so quickly. But I thought I knew. I had an idea that you did it out of pique, to be able to say you got ahead of me and Delphin. Girls have such silly reasons for doing the most serious things. And your marrying so soon convinced me that you never really cared.
Yes, I suppose it would.
The clear heaven overhead was emptied of all its gold. Dusk spread over it abruptly, darkening the seven hills. Here and there, lights began to twinkle through the foliage at their feet. The corner, where Mrs. Slade and Mrs. Annesley sat, was still shadowy and deserted. For a long time, neither of them spoke. At length, Mrs. Slade began.
I suppose I did it as a sort of joke.
A joke?
Well, girls are ferocious sometimes, you know. Girls in love especially. And I remember laughing to myself all that evening at the idea that you were waiting around there in the dark, dodging out of sight, listening for every sound, trying to get in. Of course, I was upset when I heard you were so ill afterward.
Mrs. Annesley had not moved for a long time, but now she turned slowly toward her companion.
But I didn't wait. He'd arranged everything. He was there. We were let in at once.
Delphin there? They let you in? Ah, now you're lying.
But of course he was there. Naturally, he came.
Came? How did he know he'd find you there? You must be raving.
But I answered the letter. I told him I'd be there, so he came.
Oh, God, you answered. I never thought of your answering.
It's odd you never thought of it, if you wrote the letter.
Yes, I was blind with rage.
It's cold here. We'd better go. I'm sorry for you.
Yes, we'd better go. I don't know why you should be so sorry for me.
Well, because I didn't have to wait that night.
Yes, I was beaten there. But I oughtn't to begrudge it to you, I suppose, at the end of all these years. After all, I had everything. I had him for 25 years, and you had nothing but that one letter that he didn't write.
Mrs. Annesley was silent again. At length she turned toward the door of the terrace. She took a step and turned back, facing her companion.
I had Barbara.
And now, A Long Walk to Forever by Kurt Vonnegut.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart.
They had grown up next door to each other, on the fringe of a city, near fields and woods and orchards, within sight of a lovely bell tower that belonged to a school for the blind. Now they were 20, had not seen each other for nearly a year. There had always been playful, comfortable warmth between them, but never any talk of love. His name was Newt. Her name was Catherine. In the early afternoon, Newt knocked on Catherine's front door. Catherine came to the door. She was carrying a fat, glossy magazine she'd been reading. The magazine was devoted entirely to brides.
Newt!
Could you come for a walk?
He was a shy person, even with Catherine. He covered his shyness by speaking absently, as though he were a secret agent pausing briefly on a mission between beautiful, distant, and sinister points. This manner of speaking had always been Newt's style, even in matters that concerned him desperately.
A walk?
One foot in front of the other, through leaves, over bridges.
I had no idea you were in town.
Just this minute got in.
Still in the army, I see.
7 more months to go.
He was a private first class in the artillery. His uniform was rumpled. His shoes were dusty. He needed a shave.
Let's see the pretty book.
I'm getting married, Newt.
I know. Let's go for a walk.
Oh, I'm awfully busy, Newt. The wedding's only a week away.
If we go for a walk, it'll make you rosy. It'll make you a rosy bride. A rosy bride like her. Like her. Like her. That'll be my present to Henry Stewart Chasins. By taking you for a walk, I'll be giving him a rosy bride.
You know his name?
Mother wrote. In Pittsburgh?
Yeah, you'd like him.
Maybe.
Can you come to the wedding, Newt?
That I doubt.
Your furlough isn't long enough?
Furlough? I'm not on furlough.
Oh?
I'm on what they call AWOL.
Oh, Newt, you're not!
Sure I am.
Why, Newt?
I had to find out what your silver pattern is. Albemarle, Heather, Legend, Rambler Rose. I plan to give you and your husband a spoon.
Oh, Newt, tell me really.
I want to go for a walk.
Newt, you're fooling me about being AWOL. Where from?
Fort Bragg.
North Carolina?
That's right, near Fayetteville, where Scarlett O'Hara went to school.
Well, how did you get here, Newt?
Hitched, 2 days.
Does your mother know?
I didn't come to see my mother.
Well, who did you come to see?
You.
Why me?
Because I love you. Now, can we take a walk, 1 foot in front of the other, through leaves, over bridges?
They were taking the walk now. We're in a woods with a brown leaf floor. Catherine was angry and rattled, close to tears.
No, this is absolutely crazy.
How so?
What a crazy time to tell me you love me. You never talked like that before.
Let's keep walking.
No. So far, no further. I shouldn't have come out with you at all.
You did.
Yeah, to get you out of the house. But if somebody walked in and heard you talking to me that way, a week before the wedding...
What would they think?
They'd think you were crazy.
Why?
Let me say that I am deeply honored by this crazy thing you've done. I can't believe you're really AWOL. But maybe you are. I can't believe you really love me. But maybe you do. But...
I do.
Well, I'm deeply honored. And I'm very fond of you as a friend, Newt. Extremely fond. But it's just too late.
You've never even kissed me. I don't mean you should now. I just mean this is all so unexpected. I haven't got the remotest idea of how to respond.
Just walk some more. Have a nice time.
How did you expect me to react?
How would I know what to expect? I've never done anything like this before.
Did you think I would throw myself into your arms?
Maybe.
I'm sorry to have disappointed you.
I'm not disappointed. I wasn't counting on it. This is very nice, just walking.
You know what happens next?
Nope.
We shake hands. We shake hands and we part as friends. That's what happens next.
All right. Remember me from time to time. Remember how much I love you.
Involuntarily, Catherine burst into tears. She turned her back to Newt, looked into the infinite colonnade of the woods.
What does this mean?
Rage! You have no right!
I had to find out.
If I loved you, I would have let you know before now.
You would?
Yes, I would. You would have known.
How?
You would have seen it. We're not very clever at hiding it.
Newt looked closely at Catherine's face now. To her distress, she realized that what she had said was true, that a woman couldn't hide love. Newt was seeing love now, and he did what he had to do. He kissed her.
You're hell to get along with.
I am?
You shouldn't have done that.
You didn't like it?
What did you expect, wild, abandoned passion?
I keep telling you, I never know what's going to happen next.
We say goodbye.
All right.
I'm not sorry we kissed. That was sweet. We should have kissed. We've been so close. I'll always remember you, Newt, and good luck.
You too.
Thank you, Newt.
30 days.
What?
30 days in the stockade. That's what one kiss will cost me.
I'm sorry. But I didn't ask you to go AWOL.
I know.
You certainly don't deserve any hero's reward for doing something as foolish as that.
Must be nice to be a hero. Is Henry Stewart Chasen's a hero?
He might be if he got the chance.
You really love him?
Certainly I love him. I wouldn't marry him if I didn't love him.
What's good about him?
Honestly! Do you have any idea of how offensive you're being? Many, many, many things are good about Henry. Yes, and many, many, many things are probably bad, too. That isn't any of your business. I love Henry, and I don't have to argue his merits with you.
Sorry.
Honestly.
Newt kissed her again. He kissed her again because she wanted him to. They were now in a large orchard.
How did we get so far from home, Newt?
One foot in front of the other, through leaves, over bridges.
They add up, the steps.
School for the blind.
I've got to go back now.
Say goodbye.
Every time I do, I seem to get kissed.
Sit down.
No.
I won't touch you.
I don't believe you.
She sat down under another tree, 20 feet away from him. She closed her eyes.
Dream of Henry Stewart Chasen's.
What?
Dream of your wonderful husband-to-be.
All right, I will.
She closed her eyes tighter, caught glimpses of her husband-to-be. Newt yawned. The bees were humming in the trees, and Catherine almost fell asleep. When she opened her eyes, she saw that Newt really was asleep. He began to snore softly. Catherine let Newt sleep for an hour, and while he slept, she adored him with all her heart. The shadows of the apple trees grew in the east. The bells in the tower of the school for the blind rang again. Somewhere far away, an automobile starter nagged and failed, fell still. Catherine came out from under her tree, knelt by Newt.
Newt?
Hmm?
Late.
Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Newt.
I love you.
I know.
Too late.
Too late.
A very nice walk.
I thought so.
Part company here.
Where will you go?
Hitch into town, turn myself in.
Good luck.
You too. Marry me, Catherine.
No.
He smiled, stared at her hard for a moment, then walked away quickly. Catherine watched him grow smaller in the long perspective of shadows and trees, knew that if he stopped and turned now, if he called to her, she would run to him. She would have no choice. Newt did stop. He did turn. He did call.
Catherine!
She ran to him, put her arms around him, could not speak.
Your looks are laughable, unphotographable. yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek?
And finally, Who Am I This Time? By Kurt Vonnegut.
When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change your hair for me.
My choice would be a play by Edward Bond, Dynamite, or maybe David Campton, also Dynamite, or Christopher Fry.
Why always English plays?
If I could have anything I wanted for Christmas...
You'd like an English playwright.
I'd like a good role for a change.
Coffee, George?
I meant to bring my own. This'll be fine. Thank you.
I forgot the sugar.
Does anybody still use sugar?
That's coffee.
Did Miss Sawyer say what play we do next?
I think we should vote on it.
Miss Sawyer owns the theater.
She doesn't own the North Crawford Mask and Wig Club.
You provide a theater, then you get to pick out the plays. I think we should do something relevant.
Relevant to what? Relevant is not a noun.
Everyone knows what's relevant.
I thought we should design on a play about that problem high school kid.
Every high school kid is a problem high school kid.
It's called The Kid Nobody Could Handle. That one.
And that one is relevant.
The part's a little young for Harry Nash.
Well, maybe someone else could do a part, you know.
Not star Harry?
Are you serious?
Forget it.
I'll tell you an American play I wouldn't mind doing. Streetcar. With Harry playing a cruel Stanley Kowalski. And I'm Blanche DuBois.
I was hoping for a better turnout.
I guess those here get the parts.
Well, that's really not up to me.
But if you're directing...
I have an announcement.
The play we're doing?
Let her announce.
It isn't up to me anymore. That's my announcement. I'm not going to direct the next play.
Oh, come on.
For one thing, my mother's sick. And for another, it's time the North Crawford Mask and Wig Club found some new directors.
Why?
Who needs a new director?
If you don't direct, what about Harry Nash?
Harry's so shy.
And with a new director...
I could help with your mother.
It's settled. Stand up, please. Our next group of plays will be directed by Newt.
What?
Newt?
When Dora Sawyer called this morning, I was as surprised as you are.
I didn't know you were a director.
Mostly I direct the installation of combination aluminum storm windows and screens. I guess most of you know I'm a salesman. Storm windows, doors, here and there a bathtub enclosure.
We know. At least you always show up for the club meetings.
But the highest rank I ever held on stage was either butler or policeman. Whichever is higher.
We do some complex productions, you know.
I promise to help out as much as I can. But it's my theater, and for now, anyway, Newt is in charge.
What play?
What about it, Newt?
It's, well...
Anyone for a play by David Story?
Not this time.
Someone suggested we vote.
No. I've made a choice.
A choice that's relevant? Relevant to, like, real life?
That's up to the audience. Before we go on, I want to know about Harry Nash.
Now he's making conditions.
If Harry doesn't take the part, I'm not directing. Where is he, anyway?
The hardware store. Where else?
You know he never comes to meetings.
I've never seen him at a meeting, but I didn't realize...
Couldn't drag him.
He's our best actor. He couldn't be that shy... Or exclusive.
It isn't that Harry's exclusive. He doesn't stay away because he has something else to do. He isn't married. Doesn't even have a go with a girlfriend. No men friends either. He's just too shy for social situations.
I saw him play the Jimmy Porter role and look back in anger. Pure, blazing fury. Then the idiotic part in The Importance of Being Earnest. After that, Henry VIII. Anyone could play those roles could...
On stage, he's never Harry Nash.
Yeah, the moment the curtain goes up, he's body and soul what the script tells him to be.
But in real life, he isn't anybody.
Talk about an identity crisis.
No, please, don't start psychoanalyzing.
One performance. He was like a charged-up Richard Burton. Then I stopped in at Miller's Hardware, where he works the following Monday. His personality was about as blah as the leaf rakes.
You stopped in?
Don't ask why.
We're doing a short piece by Strindberg, and there's a very difficult role.
Strindberg's Dance of Death? The father?
Miss Julie.
Never thought I'd be starting a project on Strindberg.
Miss Julie. Then there are two difficult roles.
I'd better get down to Miller's Hardware and start looking among the leaf rakes. We'll have our first readings tomorrow night.
What about Miss Julie? Wait a minute.
8 o'clock tomorrow night. Consider it relevant to the problem of a rigid social structure. Or, if you prefer, women's lib.
Pretty ambitious for a beginner.
Not if we can get Harry.
And the girl to play Julie.
Doris Sawyer was absolutely right. We had two difficult roles. And when we cast them, we found the most exciting part of our show was taking place offstage, backstage in the wings, and during rehearsal. I wouldn't want you to miss that. Strindberg's bitter battle between the sexes became the background for something else entirely. We discovered we had a drama developing within our production. On my way to Miller's Hardware, I decided to stop off at the telephone company to complain about a bill for a call to Honolulu. I'd never phoned Honolulu in my life. And there was this beautiful girl I'd never seen before behind the counter at the phone company. She explained about the bill.
You see, sir, we've just put it in the automatic billing machine, and the machine doesn't have all the bugs out of it yet.
Not only did I not call Honolulu, I don't think anybody in North Crawford ever has or will.
The machine made a mistake. I'll take the charge off your bill, sir.
Are you from around North Crawford?
I just come with the new billing machine to teach the local girls how to take care of it. After that, I go with some other machine to some other place.
Well, as long as people have to come along with the machines, I guess we're all right.
What?
When machines start delivering themselves, that's when people better start worrying.
Oh.
Wasn't very interested in that subject. I started wondering if she was interested in anything. She seemed kind of numb, almost a machine herself, an automatic phone company politeness machine.
Sir, I have all the information. Is there anything else?
How long will you be in town?
I stay in each town 8 weeks. Why?
Each town? 8 weeks?
Well, I've been going from town to town like that for the last 2 years. Always a stranger. Why did you, ask...
Because I have a hunch. We have an amateur theater group here. We're going to hold tryouts for a play tomorrow night. Why don't you try out?
Me?
Why not you?
You know, that's the first time anybody's ever asked me to participate in any community thing.
There isn't a better way to get to know a lot of people fast than to be in a play with them. This is where to come.
Sir... My name is Helene Shaw, and I just might come.
I hope you do, Helene.
I just might surprise you, and myself.
I'd never seen a girl with such pretty eyes, and at the same time, with so little hope in them. Before talking to Harry Nash, I thought I'd find out more about him. There didn't seem to be anything, except that in the town of North Crawford, could go on enjoying his performances forever. He was always so good in a role. Somebody suggested he should go to a psychiatrist so that he could be something important and colorful in real life, so he could get a girl, anyway, and maybe a better job than clerking at Miller's Hardware for minimum pay. But I don't know what a psychiatrist could have turned up. Probably he'd figure part of the problem was because Harry had been left on the doorstep of the Unitarian Church when he was a baby. He never did find out who his parents are. When I told him I'd been appointed director and that I wanted him in the play, he said what he always said to anybody who asked him to be in a play. It was kind of sad if you think about it.
Who am I this time?
Here's a script. Tryouts tomorrow night, 8 o'clock.
Thank you, sir. I'll be right on time.
The girl was right about Harry's personality. Doris Sawyer and Mary helped with the tryouts. They're held in the meeting room on the second floor of the North Crawford Public Library. The people who wanted to try out for parts waited below, and we called them upstairs one by one. Harry was earliest, as though afraid we might not consider him.
The role we're having Harry read for is a servant in a count's household, an arrogant servant who makes love to the count's daughter, Miss Julie. I cued Harry as he read the scene where he's driving the disturbed girl to suicide.
It was a play in itself.
And Strindberg hadn't written it all either. Strindberg didn't write the part, for instance, where Harry, who is such a slight little guy, adds 50 pounds to his weight, 4 inches to his height, and authority to his voice, just by picking up a playbook. Suddenly he was huge and handsome and conceited and cruel.
Just reading with him, he bullied me into believing I was a frail young girl in love with a sexy gorilla who's destroying her.
Then he finished, and he turned back into the pale hardware store clerk again.
Was that all right?
Well, for a first reading, it wasn't too bad.
Is there any chance I'll get the part?
I think we can safely say we're leaning powerfully in your direction.
You are? Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Miss Sawyer. And thanks, Mary.
Harry, is there a pretty girl downstairs? A new girl?
I didn't notice.
You'd notice that... Well, maybe not.
I wasn't waiting with the others. I was across in the reference room, just passing time.
How?
Looking at flags of different countries in the front of the dictionary.
When you go down, send her up if she's there. Her name's Helene Shaw.
Glad to, sure.
And if you don't mind waiting, we may need you again.
Not at all. Do you want the script back?
While you're waiting, you might want to study that role.
Good, yes. Thank you. Yes, I will.
Why does he pretend there's any doubt about getting the part?
I don't suppose he's pretending.
Solve your own problem, Newt. You still have to cast the girl.
Any solid hopes on your list?
No, it's a special sort of part. Anyway, here's your hunch.
We had our hearts broken. Such a beautiful girl, and at the same time so vulnerable, which is exactly what the part calls for. But she couldn't act for sour apples. No matter what we gave her to read, she was the same girl with the same smile for anybody who had a complaint about his phone bill.
Helene, try to understand. You're a lonely girl. Your parents have taken out their own difficulties on you. You love a terrible man, a servant in your home because you need love from this man.
I know.
Then express it. Read from where he tells you, come down to my level and then I'll lift us both up.
What fiend made me think you handsome? Was it the appeal of strength to someone who needs strength? Or could it be love? Could it be that? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Do you know what it is to love?
Dear, I'd like to ask you a personal question.
Go ahead.
Have you ever been in love? The reason I ask, remembering some old love might help you put more warmth in your acting.
I travel a lot. And practically all the men in the different companies I visit are married. I never stay anywhere long enough to know many people who aren't.
What about school? Everyone falls in love in school.
Even then, I was always moving. My father was a construction worker following jobs around. So I was always saying hello or goodbye to someplace.
I see.
Wow.
Would movie stars count? On television. I don't mean in real life. I never knew any in real life. I just mean up on the screen.
Oh, that's a love of a kind.
Well, yes. Yeah, it is. I used to sit through movies over and over, and I'd pretend I was married to whoever was the male star. No matter where we moved, the screen stars were still there.
Hmm.
Well, thank you, Miss Shaw. You go downstairs and wait with the others, please.
All right. And thank you. Thank you all.
We'll let you know.
I was terrible, wasn't I?
What?
I was terrible.
We don't think any
I'm,
such.
I'm a walking icebox, and I know it.
Nobody could look at you and say...
When people get to know me, they say it. That's what they all say.
Would you like some coffee? We could go over...
No, I don't. Thank you. And I don't want to be the way I am. But I just... I can't help it. Living the way I live. The only experiences I've had have been in dreams of movie stars. When I meet someone nice in real life, I feel as though I couldn't touch that person, no matter how hard I tried.
Ask Harry to come up again.
Now? What do you...
And say I'd like him in character.
In character?
Make that absolutely clear.
What on earth are you...
It's my hunch.
I'm very sorry. All it was... Please, excuse me.
It's a strain on anyone.
You asked if I've ever been in love. Well, I haven't. But I want to be. And I know what this play is about. I read it over and over all last night. I know what Miss Julie's supposed to feel and why she feels it. I...
You what, dear?
I don't know how to begin. How to break out of this...
What was that?
Probably the door to the stairwell. I guess it's the Count's arrogant servant. At least it was Harry Nash turning himself into that role. He came in so much in character, the sight of a weeping woman made him sneer.
Harry, I'd like you to meet Miss Helene Shaw. Helene, this is Harry Nash. If you were Miss Julie in the play, he'd be your lover.
Hello.
I'd say this look left Helene stark naked. Her tears stopped then and there.
Newt, what are you going to...
I want Helene to read that scene again.
With Harry?
Would you mind?
Sure, Julie's game.
What?
Julie, Miss Julie, that's you, my girl.
I'm your girl.
Don't do this, Newt. Helene couldn't possibly...
I'd just like to see the...
She can't do that scene. Don't embarrass the poor girl.
The poor girl.
How dare you?
What?
How dare you drink my father's burgundy?
Burgundy?
Have you started stealing from the Count's cellar?
The Count's cellar?
Why not?
Why not?
If I can kiss his daughter, I can drink his wine.
I'm the one that must be drunk. How could I involve myself with such a thief?
Wait, hold it.
She thinks she can treat me like dirt.
I want the tryout scene.
Yes, why?
I want a comparison.
Right. All right, Julie. Miss Julie.
Well, no need to call me Miss now. Not after what's happened.
I want something I can throw.
What?
Something representing the authority of the Count.
In the script, you kick over his boots.
Not enough. I'm throwing servitude out of my life. The Count's coat is over his chair. Maybe a little ribbon in the lapel. When referring to her father, Julie can nod toward the coat on the chair. It becomes the Count. Okay, baby, go.
Please, tell me this is important to you, too. And hold me. Hold me.
Not here. Not in this house. Not when the Count can ring for me to come polish his boots.
That doesn't matter. Not anymore.
Not anymore. You don't matter anymore, Count.
We'll go away. We'll start a life somewhere else. We could...
That takes money. Have you got money? No. We'll get it somewhere. Take it.
Take it?
Don't be superior, Miss Julie. Come down to my level, and then I'll lift us both up.
What a fiend made me think you handsome. Was it the appeal of strength to someone who needs strength? Or could it be love? Could it be that? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about? Do you even know what love is?
What it is to love.
Okay, that's it.
Okay.
No need to go on.
Do I get the part or don't I?
You'll do.
You better believe it. I see you at rehearsal, Julie. Out of my way, Count.
Helene, Miss Shaw.
Hmm?
The part of Miss Julie is yours. You were great.
I was?
I had no idea you had so much fire in you.
Fire?
Skyrockets, pinwheels, Roman candles.
Julie. Miss Julie?
Yes?
You have permission to go. At least she isn't in the bottle anymore.
No more bottle to hold her up or keep her safe.
What do you mean?
I get a nervous feeling she may have been better off back at the telephone company.
What's going on here?
We're not sure exactly.
We started having rehearsals 4 nights a week. Harry and Eileen set such a pace that everybody in the production was half crazy with excitement.
And exhaustion.
Harry and Helene were working so well together, it brought up everyone connected with the show. I was certainly lucky. Or I thought I was. Things were going so well, so hot and heavy, so early in the game. After one love scene, I had to speak to the two of them. Hey, you two! Hold something back for the actual performance. You'll burn yourselves out. Have we got a play or have we got a play?
You've got a play, all right.
You make it sound as though I've committed some kind of crime.
You should be very proud of yourself.
What do you mean?
If you're through with me now, I want to go.
Sure, Harry.
Inventory tonight, at the hardware.
Is there something I don't know about?
Do you know that girl's in love with Harry?
In the play?
What play? You aren't directing this play.
Who do you think is?
Mother Nature, at her worst.
Even if you're right, what's so terrible about...
Think what it's going to do to that girl when she discovers what Harry really is. I should say what Harry really isn't.
I don't figure that's any of our business.
The rehearsals are almost over. Then 2 performances, Friday night and Saturday night. And it's finished. Harry won't even stay for the cast party.
I know, but...
What happens to the girl 11 o'clock on Saturday night when everything she thought about Harry evaporates into thin air?
Want to hear something sweet? Something I heard from a girl who works at the phone company with Helene?
I'm not sure I do.
What?
Helene told the telephone company she doesn't want to move around anymore. She got them to give her a permanent job right here in North Crawford. Well, isn't that sweet?
Pure saccharin.
All we did... We gave her a part in a play. It wasn't any of our business. Then it was time, finally, to put on the play. It was Friday night. We absolutely murdered that audience. They believed every word that we said on stage. You can generally expect a sympathetic response. This was tremendous. The other girls at the telephone company sent Helene a dozen roses. And she and Harry were taking their curtain calls together. The roses were passed to her over the footlights. She came forward for them. She took one rose from the bouquet to give to Harry. But when she turned to give him the rose in front of everybody, Harry was gone. The curtain came down on that extra little scene. The girl offering a rose to nothing and nobody. After a flurry of backstage congratulations, there were just a few of us still around. You were absolutely.
Please, tell me, what did I do wrong? Did I insult him in some way?
He always does this after a performance. The minute it's over, he clears out as fast as he can.
Always.
I once played Anne Rutledge, and Harry was Abraham Lincoln.
It must have been heaven.
I get so worked up. I'd love Harry the way I'd love Abraham Lincoln.
But you have to come back to Earth and remind yourself that he isn't going to free the slaves, that he's just a clerk in Miller's Hardware.
He's the most marvelous man I've ever met.
But be ready for what happens after the last performance.
He'll disappear tomorrow night, too.
Without even taking off his makeup.
At least he'll stay for the cast party. He'll do that, won't he? We'll have that anyway.
Harry never goes to parties.
When the curtain comes down on Saturday, that's the last anybody will see of him until he goes to work on Monday.
How sad. Well, good night. And thank you all for so much. I can't remember when I've...
Maybe I did do something criminal.
You were trying to be nice. Which can cause such misery.
I'm sure the phone company will give her the old job.
So much talk about the performance yesterday. We have an even bigger crowd for tonight.
Ordinarily, it was Harry who set the pace. But for this last performance, Harry had to work to keep up with Helene. Something had taken hold of the girl. Absolutely electrifying. And when the curtain came down this time, it was the biggest response we'd ever had. An ovation! There was something unexpected happening as the curtain came down. Harry wanted to get away, but he couldn't. Helene wouldn't let go of his hand.
Best show we've ever done. They loved it.
They loved it. I loved it.
When you threw the chair, two... Harry, oh, it was fantastic.
You were a little fantastic, too.
I was all right.
All right? Was that really burgundy?
Excuse me, please.
Harry.
No use. He's out of it.
I know, but that performance...
The performance is over.
Everyone, out. The party's at my place. Come along, all of you.
Well, I've got to go.
Where?
Oh, home.
Oh, won't you take me to the cast party, please?
I'm afraid I'm not much on parties.
All right. I'll let you go if you promise me one thing.
What's that?
I want you to promise to stay here until I get you your present.
Present?
It's right over here. You promise?
All right. Yes, I promise.
Here. It's a play.
I see.
Romeo and Juliet. The ribbon marks my favorite scene. Don't you want to see my favorite scene?
Well...
Open the marked scene.
I see. Yes, well, I'd better...
How camest thou hither? Tell me, and wherefore? The orchard walls are high and hard to climb, and the place death, considering who thou art. If any of my kinsmen find thee here... Now, look what Romeo says. Read what Romeo says. Read it.
With love's light wings that I... With love's... With love's light wings did I overperch these walls, for stony limits cannot hold love out, and what love can do that dares love attempt, therefore thy kinsmen are no let to me.
If they do see thee, they will murder thee. Come.
Alack, there lies more peril in than I than 20 of their swords. Look thou but sweet, and I am proof against their enmity.
Come with me. I would not for the world that they saw thee here.
They never did show up at the cast party. 1 week later, they were married. They seem very happy, although they're kind of strange from time to time, depending on which play they're reading to each other. I dropped into the phone company office the other day on account of the billing machine was making dumb mistakes again. I couldn't resist asking her what play she and Harry had been reading lately.
In the last week, I've been married to Othello, loved by Faust, and kidnapped by Paris. Wouldn't you say I was the luckiest girl in town?
I do, and I think most of the girls in town think so, too.
Huh? They had their chance.
Most of them couldn't stand the excitement. Then I told her I was getting ready to do the next show, and I asked if she and Harry would be available for the cast. I'll always remember the answer.
Who are we this time?
But don't change your hair for me, not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine, stay. Is Valentine's Day.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Edith Wharton's Roman Fever and Kurt Vonnegut's Long Walk to Forever and Who Am I This Time, which was produced and directed by Catherine Thornton and Erica Slater. RAT is a production of Audio Journal.